Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Off Speed Podcast, the second episode in our rebranded format, our sports show here on the Rob Has a Podcast Network. My name is Grace. I am excited that you have joined us. We are going to be diving into different worlds of sports every week, different sports stories, and we'll play some games along the way. You might have seen in the title, we might have spoiled what a world we are covering this week, but I am very excited to be talking about a sport that I quite frankly, know very little about other than the name Tiger Woods. And so I had to bring in a golf ringer, a longtime friend of mine, and certainly somebody who knows about golf and can talk about golf. I'm pleased to be joined today by the host of the Hound Dog Harrison podcast, the Bros Ceremony podcast, and All Bets Par Off. It's a stats guy with SportsCenter with Jay and writes for sportsbettingdime.com. Michael Hound Dog Harrison, how you doing?
Very, very well. Thanks for having me on, Grace. I'm excited to talk a lot about golf. I'm hoping, of course, that the actual golf season will start here for real. But as we're recording some of these podcast, the weather still isn't super great. So probably going to be at least a month from now until I actually get to play real golf. But hopefully here soon enough.
Oh, this is you wanting to play real golf. Yes, I do know that you are an avid, you don't just watch golf, you play golf to the extent that if anybody follows you on Instagram, they would be delighted by your attire of choice when you play golf as well. I think one of the best things about you is your fashion sense on the course. What do I say? I was going to, the links? Is
yeah,
that right?
Either way, they both okay. work. And yeah, I always like to wear the loudmouth pants that my favorite golfer, John Daly, of course, endorses. They're just wacky attire, which I always find funny to wear when people sort of the side looks they give you is like, what the heck is that guy wearing? I love that. I love that so much.
Yeah. So the first thing I love to do when I have a guest on, no matter who's the guest, I love to get into the history of your sports fandom. You know, obviously you're a huge golf fan, but I know that you are a fan of many sports. And so tell us, what got you into sports, what team, what sport, what players, all of that.
Well, I guess growing up, my grandpa lived with us for the first, I think it was about 8 years of my life. So he was sort of a humongous impact on me in terms of me getting into sports, because actually everyone else in my family basically didn't care about sports at all, which was kind of funny that he was so excited because I finally was a sports guy for him. So
yes,
he loved the Maple Leafs and the Blue Jays. So those were my first two loves, just following the stats with him and the newspapers. Yes, there was a time back in the day when you couldn't just use your smartphone to take a look at the stats. So
yeah, if they're on like a coast trip or something, you had to look up the stats at the bottom, or like you couldn't find like the Yankees game on TV. You had to look at the results of the stat box the next day.
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely was a different time then for sure. And so yeah, he got me to the Leafs and the Blue Jays, and then sort of. I don't know exactly. I can't even exactly pinpoint how, but I watched a Super Bowl or two in the late 90s and I wanted to pick a team that no one else really cared about. So I picked the Seattle Seahawks. They're an average team. Every year they're 8-8. They didn't really do a whole lot at all. So I figured I don't want to be a Cowboys fan or a Packers fan or whatever, the obvious fandom.
Yeah.
So I picked them, and it's actually worked out pretty darn well for me, all things considered, the last 20 or 15 or so years. For the most part, they've been a good team. So I got into them and just became a diehard and haven't missed a game since like 2003, I think, even the preseason games. I refuse to ever miss a game. No chance.
Yeah, I said that Mikey and I are friends. We also were roommates at one point in our lives, and our bedrooms were next door to each other. And boy, if the Seahawks were having a bad game, you knew. You knew the house knew the Seahawks were playing poorly. Yeah. Yep. A very passionate Seahawks fan. Let's jump really quick. You know, we're not a super recappy podcast news podcast, but how do you feel about this Russell Wilson trade?
Yeah, it's sort of something I never actually thought was going to happen. It was one of those deals where, you know, it's like, okay, there's all this smoke. There's not going to actually be fire. They're not going to really trade their franchise icon quarterback. But when it happened, it was obviously I was quite stunned and not completely because, like I said, there had been rumors for a year or two about that.
Yeah.
Obviously, a tremendous quarterback, but it just seemed like if he wanted out, they are going to have to pay him eventually here in a few years a lot of money. And I guess they were like, you know, I think he's going to be 34, I believe it is, for the next season. So they were like, no, obviously there's a good amount of quarterbacks that are playing well into their late 30s and even 40s with Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. But I guess they didn't want to pay him. So it's, you know, it's disappointing. It's too bad. He's had an awesome 10-year tenure with Seattle. But I guess it's time to move, turn the page and hopefully find the next quarterback. But yeah, it was definitely pretty crushing to see him traded.
Are you the type of sports fan who, you know, you're going to check out Russell Wilson on the Broncos? Are you cheering for him in the Broncos? Like, until they play the Seahawks, are you okay with, like, you know, yeah, you can do well over there? Are you like, nope, you're gone. You're no longer a Seahawk, you know?
I am absolutely not a Denver Bronco fan for one reason specifically, yes, for this, because they get their future first round pick and second round pick next year, Seattle. So I want them to lose every single game.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
But otherwise, yeah, I don't hate Russell Wilson or anything like that. It's funny though. My buddy's mom thought I was going to become a Broncos fan after the trade. Yeah. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah, any fan of any team who switches allegiances on the team based on the player, get out of here with that nonsense. So no chance. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So that's your sports fandom. Very, very fun. Very exciting. So let's jump into the world of golf. I said it up front. I know very little about golf. I feel like there was a time in my life where when Tiger Woods was still, he's still playing, right? But when he was sort of on top of the world, how could you not know the name Tiger Woods? As a Canadian, you know, two Canadians on this podcast, Mike Weir is a name that I was like, yep, okay, I'll follow some golf because Mike Weir is good. That did not last too long. But for, you know, folks who are listening into the podcast, don't know a ton about golf, apologies if you do and you feel like I'm asking the worst questions. If you want more in-depth analysis, I'm sure we'll give you Mikey's Twitter handle later. You can tag him about all your golf questions, but from a more casual standpoint, like, what is exciting in the world of golf at the moment, Mikey?
Well, first of all, what I would say to someone who's not really fully sure if they want to watch golf, because I, as much as I'm a diehard golf fan, I understand it's a lot of hours to commit to a tournament for 4 days. What I always would say to someone is, don't even watch the first three rounds of the tournament. Okay. Because obviously, you know, for diehards, you care about what's going on, but like for a casual fan, there's nothing really at stake. There's no like, okay, this is the last putt, he has to make this or she has to make this or the tournament's over, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So it's sort of almost akin to another sport like curling. I'm not huge on, but I've started to appreciate it a bit more. Mm-hmm. But watching the round robin matches of a curling like a week before the final, sort of like golf, the first three rounds, it's almost like, well, there's nothing really super exciting or, you know, completely immediate of what's going to happen. So I would always say for a golf fan or someone who isn't sure if they want to take the time to watch the golf, because it is a long broadcast, just on the, go watch a major, start on the back nine holes, because it's only about approximately 2 hours for that viewing then.
Oh, that's much lovely. That way. What a lovely amount of time to watch a sporting event, 2 hours. I mean, it makes sense to make trim the fat a little bit in terms of, you know, I think golf, you know, it's funny. Golf seems like a sport that I actually think I could get into because it has very similar comparisons to a sport that you and I both love, baseball. People say, well, it's boring. Baseball is boring. It's long and boring. And I feel like golf, you know, knowing that it's a multi-day event, maybe get some of that same reputation in that I can't watch all of that and nothing is really happening. And so this advice here of like, don't worry, but you know, skip all the first stuff and wait till there's like pressure is really interesting way to look at the sport of golf. Yeah,
for sure. Or even like you could even do like the last three holes or something like that. Like, you know, oftentimes, I mean, sometimes, of course, it's a blowout victory, which obviously isn't exciting, but more often than not, it comes down to the last couple holes, or you think it's over. It's like, oh, this guy has a 4-shot lead with like 5 to play. Oh, it's done. And all of a sudden, you know, he or she, they've had a bad shot. All of a sudden, oh my goodness, you know, all of a sudden everything is wide open again. So it's a volatile sport, which is interesting in terms of, you know, a lot of different people could be leading and or dropping off and playing well. So yeah, it's very, very hard to predict who's going to win, because there's just so many good players out there on the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tours right now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Tiger Woods sort of dominated the conversation in terms of golf and winning. There are other, you know, you mentioned some other folks who Phil Mickelson, you know, people who sort of become big names. But is this much more of a sport where you perhaps are, you know, because somebody could sort of just fall off, not make it, like this isn't necessarily a sport where you might have allegiance to, you know, like we have allegiances to teams. You're talking about how, you know, I mean, I'm not going to become a Denver Broncos fan just because Russell Wilson has been traded. But do you find it's easier to just sort of follow golf as a whole and see like, oh yeah, this week I get to see this person, rather than sort of relying on like, oh yeah, I'm going to follow this individual player, you know, be a fan of this player? Is that just not how it, it's not really the culture of golf, I presume?
Well, for me, I mean, my favorite player, John Daly, as I mentioned earlier, he plays in the Champions Tour now, so I don't unfortunately get to see him on the PGA Tour. So that would definitely be the one player I would be always following. But now that he's not really a relevant player, at least in the regular tour, I basically just watch the game now for the excitement of, you know, what's going to happen. Because there's, like I said, there's so many good young players, and you just never know week to week. Recently, the Players' Championship, the 322nd ranked player in the world, Anirban Lahiri, who hadn't had a top in his last 15 tournaments, hadn't been better than 40th, was leading after three rounds and lost by one shot. He finished second. So it's like, wow, what? It makes no sense. Like, golf makes no sense. It's so random like that or whatever. So I have two different ways I watch golf. One is, of course, there's some players that I find exciting to watch. But two, because I bet on golf as well, an unbelievably difficult sport to win on when you bet on, because there's just there's 156 players to start a tournament. So right, really challenging to hit on those bets. So I watch it sort of two ways. One, the guys who I like, but then, of course, the one people who can make me money. But yeah, there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of fun, good players, exciting players on the tour now, even though Tiger Woods isn't playing because he's been injured for the last you know, year and a half. Is definitely a lot of good players to watch.
Was Tiger Woods, what's the deal with his son? His son is not that old, but was he playing with his son, or is that just like, I feel like I've seen it go viral that he was like playing golf with his son, but his son is not that, he's not like even close to being like competing in tournaments, right? I believe.
No, his son is, I think, yeah, 14. They're playing the PNC championship, the father son tournament. And they finished second, actually, to John Daly and his son, who finished first, which was awesome for me. And yes, John Daly's son, I think, is 18 or 19. So he actually seems like he is going to Arkansas for college golf. And you never know. It's so unbelievably difficult to make it on the PGA Tour. But seems like there's some thought of actual prospects for him for the future here coming up. And obviously, having the name Daly is going to get him into other tournaments, maybe so, more so than someone that wouldn't. Same with Charlie Woods, Tiger's son. He's 14. Certainly seemed like he had a lot of game, but, you know, quite a ways to go. Uh-huh. But just sort of like Charlie's dad, Tiger, the reason there's a lot of good young players in the PGA Tour right now is because of Tiger. Because Tiger, yeah, came out when he was super young. No one at that time would have started as a professional when they were 20. That was unheard of. But because he sort of set that bar and that example, there's a lot of the young players who have done that now. So theoretically, who knows, of course, but like John Daly's son could be on the PGA Tour in a couple of years, and Charlie Woods could be in like 6 or so years, but obviously there's a lot to get to that point.
Is it like now is the time where like we're having the Tiger Woods effect? Are there a lot of players on the, you know, who are starting out sort of maybe making some of these tournaments being like, yeah, I was totally inspired to play golf because of Tiger Woods? I feel like that has to be coming at some point. You know, these, like, he's a generational talent. Again, like, you could not, like, you know, he is the reason why I think for a lot of, like, you know, a SportsCenter highlight is like about golf, because it's like was about Tiger Woods, you know. So I feel like there have to be a lot of people who are inspired by Tiger Woods and are playing golf because of Tiger Woods. And it feels like, you know, yeah, if you're like, yeah, about 20 years, yeah, there's probably lots of people who were inspired by him who are already playing, but these kids who watched him like young, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, there's definitely, we'll get into that a little bit in terms of the good young players in the tour right now. But yeah, it's there's a lot of guys who are look up to Tiger, and it's funny that a lot of them are like, oh, I wish I would have played Tiger in his prime, and yeah. Like, it would have been so cool. Yeah. And
they even got beat though.
Exactly. That's what, like, you know, Tiger's contemporaries when he was playing, like Vijay Singh and Ernie Els and Phil Mickelson, as you mentioned. Yeah. A lot of them like, no. You didn't want to play Tiger in his prime. You would have lost. So you didn't want to actually play him when he was at his peak of his career, you know?
You know what I wish I really played against? Michael Jordan. I wish I could play basketball against Michael Jordan in the 90s, you know? Yeah, right. I get smoked.
That'd be fun.
Before we talk about players who want to watch, I think interesting to chat about, like, you've talked a little bit, like, how do you watch golf? Which you watch, I think, a lot more than even the folks who might be casuals. But I'm talking about, like, you know, about a month ish, from, I think probably a little bit less. I believe the Masters, men's Masters tournament, mm-hmm. will be happening in April. How do you like? So I guess first question I'll ask is, like, what are the other than the Masters? Are there other yearly events, perhaps other tournaments? The Masters seems to be the one that I can really think of off the top of my head. These actual diehard golf fans are like yelling at their podcast screens right now. But like, what else should we keep an eye on in terms of like major tournaments?
Yeah, so the way the PGA Tour, a couple of years ago, they switched around the schedule a little bit to be able to have a big tournament every month from March to August. So in March, which recently just completed, was the Players Championship at Sawgrass. That's sort of the PGA Tour's major, even though it's not technically a major, it's considered the fifth one. That's their crown jewel event. The winner got like $3.4 million, Cameron Smith, which is a crazy amount of money. Golf purses have gone shot up like crazy because of the Tiger Woods effect, as we mentioned. Okay. It's nuts how much they make now. Yeah, so that's in March, and then in April, as you mentioned, the Masters, which is, generally obviously considered sort of the more interesting one because it's the only major of the four that's at the same course all the time every year. So you start to really know the course, you know, super well, because generally speaking, the other majors, they have a bit of a rotation, and approximately, depending on the course, of course, between 10 to 12 years between each time they've been to that course. So you don't remember it as much, you know, the nuances of the track. But the Masters every April is at Augusta National, so everyone knows that, and there's almost a romanticized feeling about that place. Then now the PGA Championship, which used to be in August, is now in May. And then the U.S. Open Golf Major is in June, with the Open Championship in July. And then the PGA Tour likes to finish their season, or they finish their season with the FedEx Cup playoffs, a three event sort of series of events to try to conclude the best player of that season. So that's in August. So the PGA Tour has managed to finagle a way to have big events through March and August. And then they have a bunch of other events throughout the year as well. Pretty much the off season last year for golf was 1 week, just one.
Oh my. Wow. Wow. Incredible. So we're coming at, this is a perfect time for us to do the podcast. We are coming up on, you know, every month, there's something, to watch. And if you're like, get super into it, there's a lot more you'll be able to watch, this year. So that's fun. And so, all of these tournaments, presumably the majors, you get more points, like, in terms of, at the end of the season, like there's a tour champion.
Exactly. Yeah. So the FedEx Cup playoffs, so they go to the Tour Championship. The winner of that gets $10 million plus the actual person winning the tournament. So I think it's around $12 million or something along those lines. So the majors are definitely the bigger ticket events for more money, FedEx Cup points, and obviously more world ranking points, which are huge, because if the players play well in that, then they can qualify for the President's Cup or the Ryder Cup. They switch every year. The President's Cup is the United States against the internationals, not including the Europeans. And then the Ryder Cup is the United States against the European players. So then, so obviously those majors, those big ticket events, are the ones where if you play really well in those, you can find yourself on those teams, which are getting increasingly more difficult to make because there's so many good players around the world. It's awesome how golf has really become an international game. And that's sort of what they tried to do when they started the World Golf Championships events in the late 90s, was to try to get all of the best players from around the world all together at the same time in the same tournament. So even though the World Golf Championships events aren't majors, they're pretty much basically on par or just slightly below the Players Championship. So there's always elite fields that play, like pretty much everyone plays those ones. Anyone who's anyone plus a lot of international players as well, which is obviously great for the game. It's really cool to see different countries represented in the game of golf.
Yeah. And just for a point of clarity here, that generally we're talking about the men's side. How similar is the women's tour in terms of like structure to the men's side of things?
Yeah, the women have five majors actually, so an extra chance for them to sort of have the glory for them on that. And yeah, that tour is also just so incredibly deep. Like it's insane how these women. They're like 16 years old and they're winning majors. Like it's nuts. Oh, really? Compared to the men's tour. It like for example, Lydia Ko has won a couple majors. She's from New Zealand and she's 24 years old, but she's, I think, been playing on the tour since she was like, I want to say like 13 or 14, oh, something like gosh. That.
Yeah.
And she won like, I think almost 20 times. I think it's just shy of 20 times. So, they women, like it's really, really young, the tour, in terms of like the high end players. Of course, there's some veteran players that still win from time to time, but it's quite rare to see anyone in their 30s on the LPGA tour winning. It's just certainly nowadays, anyway, much more unheard of. And yeah, so they also sort of have a similar structure to the PGA tour in terms of, you know, their bigger events as well. And it's cool that they have five majors. I quite like that, and I like the fact that there's a lot of tournaments around the world for the LPGA Tour as well. A lot of tournaments in Asia, which is great because I, with my work hours, like to stay up super late at night. So it's fun to watch on a Saturday night at like 2 a.m. some live golf. I absolutely love that.
And if you don't work hours that Mikey does, you can just PVR it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Honestly, golf is one of the best sports to PVR because there's so much downtime. So that actually goes to another point about, you know, getting people to watching golf who might not really care so much. I would say, yeah, PVR it. You could rip through the commercials. You could rip through like some golfers. Oh my goodness. It's a human rain delay. They take like, they're supposed to be penalties for like, if you take too long to hit, they're supposed to, it never happens unless it's like the a player no one knows about. That's the only time they ever get penalized shot.
Yeah.
So yeah, just rip through like a minute of Bryson DeChambeau taking forever to hit a shot on the PVR. Perfect. Done.
We talked about this when Puya came on to chat about like English Premier Soccer. And I was like, I feel like there was a time when I first got into it that was such the sweet spot of like getting into a new sport where I could like PVR and watch the game like later at a time that was convenient for me because my like Google algorithms had not figured out that I was into like watching Liverpool games yet. And then there was like eventually that was like my phone would be like, hey, Liverpool's winning. And it's like, don't tell me that. I was going to like watch the game. And I feel like it could be the same, you know, if you're getting into golf, like I think the thing about getting into a new sport is that like your phone, you don't follow anything on Twitter, you know, like all this stuff, you could just be like totally like spoiler free. I know that's like sometimes people are very like, I think Zach last week was like, no, I have to watch the thing live. But I think when you're first getting into something, it's like to your advantage that you can just be like, I'll PVR it. I'm going to watch it when I can watch it. And I will not be spoiled on who wins this thing because my phone won't tell me. So
the only downside to, unfortunately, I've been burned on this in the past with golf, PVRing it to watch a little bit later, especially if you're, of course, from a betting angle, I mean,
right,
because the tournament, as I said, is so volatile and they're all over the place. You can want to bet on a player or think they're going to win. All of a sudden they make a horrible hole and they're out of the tournament. And if you're watching behind, then you're not able to bet on it. So I've been burned on that before, not wanting the spoiler. And then I should have been paying attention to who was winning, and then I got burned. I could have won more money, unfortunately, on that. But just in a general sense, though, my goodness, it's crazy how many people, not even talking necessarily even about sports, but how many people, when you say to them, don't spoil what's going on, I don't want to know, they take it as their personal project to have to tell you in some way what's going on. I remember, I know a show that we both love, Survivor.
Yes.
I know I'm going into the weeds on this, but
it was good.
There's a girl at work who also loves Survivor. Love her. She's great. But I was like, okay, I'm an episode behind.
Yeah.
I'm going into the finale tonight. Don't tell me what's happened. I don't want to know. And she goes, oh, I hope this person, or this person wins. Well, then obviously I know the other person got voted off the previous episode. But she couldn't understand the concept. I was like, how are you not understanding this? You've completely spoiled what happened on the previous episode, which I told you don't. Or like someone will say like,
Here's my one. Can I tell you my one? Where, sure, yeah. And I think I'm guilty of this too. Where it's like, hey, have you watched like this TV show? And you're like, no. I'm like, well, I won't spoil it, but here's like a really funny bit they do. I'll like tell you the joke that like is it basically just a spoiler, even if it's not like a spoiler. I think I do that, and it's really bad. But I just want to tell you the really funny thing. That I
saw. There's also the when someone says like, yeah, they were fun on the show. Yeah, they were great. Right. Well, thanks for the past tense on that. Now I know, again, they're gone. So,
well, I mean, this is, at least in golf, you know, I don't really have to worry, but like, I feel like where I get is I will Google like, you know, I'm like, oh, who's that actor? And like, they're in one episode. It feels like they're in one episode. They're like here for one episode. Then it's just like, oh yeah, John Smith, he's in 48 episodes of the show. And you're like, oh, well, okay. Yeah. Like he's important. Or it's like, he's in 5 episodes. You're like, wow, he was.
Well, that's it. You know, the other way, of course, where it's like, I do the same thing. I'll Google the actor and then it's like, I'm hoping they're in the show for a while. And it's like, oh, they're only in the one episode. Ah, darn. Why did I even Google that?
Damn. Or Google will autocorrect your finit to like John Smith dead TV show.
Yep.
Thanks,
I've
buddy.
100% done that with a show I love, Coronation Street. I was just Googling the actor's name. And then it was like, actor talks about how their character got killed off.
Wow. Ah. Coronation Street. That's, I feel like if people are not playing like a Grace Canadian bingo on the show, like, check Coronation Street off of your bingo card. I did not expect Coronation Street to come up today. Okay, let's get out of the weeds. How should I metaphor back? Let's get back on the green. Let's talk to who's good. Who's the best golfer in the world at the moment?
It's Jon Rahm, Spaniard, who won the U.S. Open in 2021, and he is fantastic. He's been struggling a little bit this year. It's a relative term because he's still a great player with his putting, but he's going to win multiple majors without question. It's actually the first time since the World Golf Rankings came out, I believe it was 1984, I want to say, where the top 5 players in the world are under 30 years old. So it's it goes to the point of like, you know, it's a younger game now than it used to be. So Jon Rahm is outstanding. And he, like you said, he's already won a major. He's going to win. Certainly going to win more, no doubt about that. And then it goes Colin Morikawa, who's already won 2 majors, and he's only been like relevant on the PGA Tour for 2 years, 2 or 3 years. Maybe this is his third year now, actually, his third full year. And he's already won a couple majors, which is nuts. Then there's Victor Hovland, who's won 3 times in the Tour, and he's come close here recently a number of times. Patrick Cantlay is incredible, just a super solid player, and Scottie Scheffler hadn't won, then he won twice in 3 events. So it's those are the top 5 players in the world. And they're just, it's so hard because when Tiger Woods was in his heyday, because he was so dominant, obviously he had some players who were really good that could win, but it was basically him winning. Nowadays, it's just a new player every week. Oh, that guy's the best player in the world. Oh, that guy's the best player. It's, you know, at least in the PGA Tour anyway, it's they keep jockeying for position and going back and forth about who actually is the best player. It's just, it's nuts.
And who you're talking about, the tournament that just finished up, the Players Championship. Was that what it was? Who won that tournament? Are they at the top or is this just kind of an upset or surprise?
No, well, Cameron Smith, actually, speaking of golf betting, he's a guy who I picked to win a couple of majors last year and I bet on him. Of course, he didn't win then, and then he wins his Players Championship. So he moved up to 6th in the world by doing that. He's from Australia, and he's unbelievable at putting. His stats bear that out too. He actually is like one of the most clutch putters and best putters in the tour, which that can make up for a lot of mistakes if you're good at putting. And he was unbelievable. He made 10 birdies on his final round to win, and he held off Anna Baron Lahiri by 1 shot, who is a complete unknown. And as you were saying, it's crazy how like guys can, or even there's a lot of LPGA Tour examples as well. Just people pop up out of nowhere for 1 week, win a tournament, and then you never hear from them again, or they finish second or something. It's crazy how hard it is to consistently be really good for a long, long time on those tours.
And then how much money can they win in these tournaments? Is you're saying
So the winner for the Players Championship, more than usual, won $3.4 million, Cameron Smith.
All right, I think I'm going to start golfing. That might be, train. Can you train me? Yeah, I'll go, let's go golfing this summer.
That'd be awesome.
That's actually a real request, other than my stupid joke that I want to be rich, but we should go golfing. So that's the men's side. And actually, let me very quickly, I'm going to jump back. You're talking about, who did you say was Cameron Smith, a great putter. Mm-hmm. So, and the stats sort of bear that out. It feels very I'm a huge baseball fan. It feels like the past 10-ish years, it's like, you know, the stats that we loved for years did not always bear out, you know, that the best actually is a baseball, obviously, is a totally different sport than golf in terms of, it's a team-based game. You're playing against the team of people out there. But has golf embraced analytics in the same way that a lot of these other sports have? And if so, what kind of, how far down the analytics hole can you get with golf?
Oh my goodness, it is insane. Honestly, there you can, it's nuts. If you go to a player's profile on PGAtour.com, they have just oodles and oodles of stats like rough proximity, how many times they hit the ball on the left side of in the rough, how many times they hit it on the right side, their tour rank from like 175 yards to 200 yards, their bounce back ability after making a bad hole, coming back with a birdie.
I was hoping when you said there's oodles of stat that like some there was going to be a golf stat. Is this his oodle score? It's 7.8. and it means this.
That'd be awesome. I'm sure that's coming because there's so many. And there's the main ones that I like to use in my hopeful predictions for who's going to win in my all bets par off videos where I pick four winners to try to win that tournament that week. I was on fire to start the season with three wins the first 5 weeks, which is just it's an unheard of. To be able to do that. And now in 2022, I've been absolutely ice cold and horrible. So it goes back to it's being so difficult to pick winners in the tour. Yeah. But the stats I like to use are strokes gained stats. So like strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained putting, strokes gained around the green, like that sort of thing. So every player will be ranked on that. And, some players like, as I mentioned, Anubhav Lahiri, who was a complete out of nowhere player who hadn't had any top 40s in 15 tournaments, and almost won the Players. He was like 238th in like strokes gained approaching the green. And then he was unbelievable that next week. So golf is just so random. So there's just an inordinate amount of stats for golf. You can just get lost a big time wormhole in that one.
Invoji mentioned he's so ranked so low. Or maybe it was surprising, like how many players are competing in the majors? Like how many people typically compete in the tournament?
It varies by the major, but generally speaking, for regular PGA Tour events, I believe it's 156 players or 144 for an event.
Yeah.
The Masters is much lower. I think it's typically around 80-ish players. And 10 of those are past champions who have no chance of winning at all. They like to have a few amateurs in there as well. And then
is Mike Weir still out there? Is he still golfing? Or is he retired?
Because he won the Masters in 2003, he'll always be able to go back there until I believe he's 65 years old. So he always will play that one every year. In terms of the regular tour, he doesn't play that anymore. He plays the Champions Tour, which he's won on. Unfortunately, actually last year beat John Daly on the last hole, which broke my heart.
Can you indulge me for a moment and listeners indulge me? Who's the best on the men's side? We'll get to the women's side in a second. Who's the best Canadian golfer at the moment?
I would say there's never been deeper for the men's side for golf in Canada. It's actually pretty.
They call that the awesome. Mike Weir effect.
Yeah, it's absolutely. He's a huge factor in that. Corey Connors would probably be the one that's most consistent. The name that's popping up most in leaderboards, around the top 10 or so for. I believe at the Players Championship, I think he was top 15, maybe not quite top 15, but he's around that. Adam Hadwin actually was top 15, but there's probably approximately eight players with their tour cards right now from Canada, which has never been the case before. So there's a lot more Canadian talent, most of which Connors, like I said, has won once. Adam Hadwin's won once. A lot of these players, they only, it's so, so difficult to win. They're not, racking up the victories. It's just so incredibly tough. But yeah, it's probably Corey Connors nowadays would be the one consistently anyway that you would say. Mackenzie Hughes every so often. gets in the top five, but it's quite
okay. Deep. That's just, that segment was just for me. Let's switch over to the women's side, the LGPA. You mentioned Lydia Ko. I was looking up to when she was ranked number one in 2015. 17 years of age, making her the youngest player of either gender to ever be ranked number one. That is incredible. But who else is out there in terms of players to keep an eye on the women's side of things?
I mean, if you want to go straight back to Canada, because she's absolutely one of the
top players in the world. I do want to go straight back to
Canada. Brooke Henderson is like top five player on the LPGA Tour, and she's already won a major. I think she's won, I believe, 10 times. Consistently, she almost won another major, the ANA Inspiration. She lost the playoff, which was unfortunately just demoralizing that she lost that. But she's always consistently, easily one of the top favorites to win tournaments. She's only 24 as well, but she's also been around forever. I want to say she probably has been around, I want to say maybe 8 years on the LPGA Tour already.
Yeah, it's 2015 seems to be perhaps when she started. Could be before that, but
it's pretty crazy to say, like, she is 24. That's obviously very, very young, but in tour standards, she's a grizzled veteran now. It's just so weird to say, but
I don't really like that 2015 is 7 years ago, though, either, Mikey. That doesn't seem, that just like blows my mind. Anyway,
It's wild. Like, people tell me sometimes at work, like, oh yeah, like I'll be like ranting about the Seahawks losing the Super Bowl in 2006, and then they'll be like, I don't remember that. I was like 4 years old because they were just an intern starting out. I'm like, oh no. Or actually, I had a conversation with a guy the other day. He's like 26, I think. He's like, who's Andre Agassi for tennis? I was like, oh, but why would he know, right?
Like, yeah, that's totally fair. I know. I'm like, Brooke is only 6 years younger than me. I'm born in 1991, but I'm like, yeah, you're born in 1997 and you're a grizzled veteran.
Yep.
That's so unfair.
Yeah. It's crazy. So yeah, she's definitely one, the best player right now going without question is Jin Young Ko. I believe it's 6 wins in 10 tournaments. Just in sensational player, doesn't get enough as much play as she should in terms of how ridiculously good she is. I think she hit won a tournament by hitting I could be completely a little bit wrong on this, but like hitting like 66 of the 72 greens in regulation or something along those lines, just like automatic hitting every single green. Like, obviously you win 6 times in 10 starts. That's just amazing. So she's a fantastic, I believe she's like mid 20s as well, which again, that's still 26. Very young, but she's incredible. She's the number one player in the world right now.
Is the age thing in the women's side that like they're younger? Is that women's access to golf? Like, the LGBA is not new, but certainly I do wonder how much that's the improvements we made in equality being like, yeah, you can play golf. Like, you could have a career in golf for women. I do wonder how much that's in there. But I mean, yeah, you would also think that people who'd been playing for a while would do it. So I'm intrigued. If people have thoughts, tweet at us, let us know.
Part of it is for the LPGA is that some of them, not all these women, but they obviously want to start a family, and so when doing so, they can't compete, and they obviously want to be at home, understandably, for a while. So then, I mean, the tour is so incredibly close, and everyone like is so good. The razor's edge of being able to win a tournament versus like finishing 30th is super thin. And so let's say they take a couple of years off or whatever, they're unable to get to that previous level. There's been some LPGA players who, like Lorena Ochoa comes to mind, who I believe she retired around maybe late 20s, and she had won I don't know exactly, probably 30 tournaments. Like, she won a bunch of tournaments and then just sort of almost abruptly retired and to have a family. And so that's definitely part of it, is women wanting to start a family. That's definitely comes into play. But yeah, there's a lot of great players. One of my favorites to watch is Patty Tavitanikit. She's a long bomber. She won a major last year, so she's fun to watch. And Nelly Korda, although news came out recently, she had a blood clot, which is just, she's like early 20s, which is scary, but she's outstanding as well. There's
highest
a lot
ranked
of
American, talent. I believe, at the moment for our fans. I love when you're talking about the previous player. I love when I, you know, have guests on who can just pronounce the names of the players. That's because it's not going to be me. Tavitanikit.
There's one of my favorite players in the men's tour is Jaz Janawananand.
That's a great name.
It's an amazing name, and he's such a fun player. But like sometimes the broadcasters, they don't even try to attempt to say their name. It's like these players have been playing for a while here. Like you maybe should show them some respect because they're good players.
Hey,
their name.
I'm with you. This is a great article. More Canadian talk. On your bingo card, check off CBC. There was a great CBC article a few years ago that was talking about, if we can learn how to pronounce names like Chekhov and all these, like, you know, we can pronounce Eastern European names. Like, we can figure out how to pronounce all these other names. Absolutely. So, yeah, learn your coworkers' names who you think they're difficult name. You'll figure it out. But I'm not following golf all the time, so these ones are all new to me. But interesting about Nelly Korda, 23. Hopefully that health issue is okay. But yeah, the highest ranked American on the LGPA at the moment. Okay, fun. Before we sort of wrap up golf talk here, is there anything else you want people to know? Anything else they should be looking at, keeping an eye on?
Well, definitely, as we mentioned, the majors are coming up. You're definitely getting into the sweet spot of the PGA Tour and LPGA Tour seasons because there's going to be so many big tournaments coming up here throughout the summer. So you're definitely, for especially certainly casuals fans, March to like August is without question the wheelhouse for golf watching. Because as I mentioned, they have like other tournaments. There's only the 1 week off season, but those tournaments are so low level. I'm a diehard. I'll be following the scores on my phone, but NFL's on at that point, so I'm not even watching those tournaments, and I'm a diehard. So from September to like the September to November events, I barely ever watch those that much at all, really. January and February are nice. You see some nice tournaments in Hawaii and Arizona and LA, but of course, in Canada, stuck in the cold here, it's always a little bit frustrating that you can't be playing golf at that point. But yeah, we're definitely getting into the peak golf season to watch and obviously also to play as well.
Yeah. All right. This is very fun. Thanks for chatting golf with us. We're not done. We're going to play a game. So typically each week, we're not going to play a golf game because I can't write the golf questions for you, Mikey. So there's a lot happening in the sports world related to trades. I believe, have we hit the... gonna out myself when we are recording this, but I believe the NHL trade deadline, it has not passed, right? It is around the time that this podcast will come out. I believe it will have passed, but it has not yet passed by the time we're recording this. The MLB lockout ended, and so there's been a flurry of transactions before spring training begins and before opening day. So lots of if you're a fan of transactions in sports, it's a really good time to be a fan of sports.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what I thought I would do is I looked up some interesting trades, Mikey, and I'm going to quiz you. I normally have multiple people play, but today it will just be you. So I am more than willing to give you as many hints as you need, but I have a few questions and we'll see how you do. I'll give you an easy one to start off. Although I said that last time and they totally disagreed that it was an easy question. So we'll see.
Pressure's on considering we already mentioned that I work at TSN. So yeah, if for some reason I'm horrible at these, we'll just scratch that from the conversation.
Yeah. If you're not hearing this part of the podcast, if you are hearing it, it's because Mikey did pretty good. All right. In 2011, this is a baseball question. Ozzie Guillen was traded to the Miami Marlins for two players to be named later. What position did Guillen play at the time? Shortstop, first base, or was he the manager of the team?
He was thank you. That's a good one. manager of the team, Ozzie Guillen. I hope I'm right on this one. Manager of the team, and I wish he was still manager in terms of entertainment value. He was great on Chicago and the Marlins.
Yeah, you are correct. He was the manager at the time, traded to the Miami Marlins. I believe his tenure did not last particularly long.
Not with the Marlins, no. I really thought you were going to ask me, the two players he was traded for.
No.
And they, oh, no, I have no idea.
I have him if you want. Sure. John Martinez and Acevedo Martinez eventually were sent back to the Chicago White Sox. But no, he lasted 1 year in Miami and then he was gone. And I believe then the Marlins then brought in. What's his name? This is bad. I'm going to edit it. Who did they bring in the next year? Whatever.
Ooh, that's the manager.
The Miami Marlins. What's his name? Didn't they bring him in immediately?
Well, I know Derek Jeter, of course, was the president there for like 3 or 4 years, but then he stepped down. But in terms of the manager, I'm trying to remember.
Oh no, they brought in Mike Redmond. I thought what's his name came in? Don Mattingly. He doesn't come until 2016. So
right.
We'll basically cut most of that out. Okay. I have mostly baseball questions because baseball trades are so much more fun. But let me give you a basketball question.
Ooh,
okay. In 2012, the Boston Celtics shipped off two of their championship winning core in exchange for 3 first-round picks. Where did the Celtics trade Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce? Here's what I'll do. If you can get the question, I'll eliminate the multiple choice because you nailed that last one. But I'll give you 2 points if you can get it. And then if you need the multiple choice, you can always ask for it. I'll give you a point if you can answer the question correctly after getting the multiple choice.
So if memory serves me right, it's so funny how sometimes you can, like, you forget what team, like, for example, random Mike Modano retired on the Red Wings, or Daniel Alfredson retired on the Red Wings. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
So sometimes it's easy to sort of forget, but I do remember this one. This is at the time the Nets were thinking they were going to load up, and they're with, I believe at the time, new owner was going to get all these great players and then we're going to win, and it fell flat in their face. And I don't even think they even really made a serious run with those two guys.
Absolutely correct. They traded off 3 first-round draft picks, I believe, with some players in that deal as well, to trade for Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, and do not do particularly well moving forward. Interestingly enough, they're like kind of like after doing that, I don't think they gave as much away, but they're in a little bit of a, you know, stacking their team at the moment to try and push for a championship win. Mm-hmm. And hopefully for Brooklyn Nets fans, turns out better than the Pierce Garnett trade. Let's jump back to baseball. Sorry. Here's one. This is a really tough one, I think. 1930, the Chattanooga Lookouts, Mikey, trade Johnny Jones for what? And it's not a player.
It's not a player.
Not a player.
Oh, my. Gosh.
You want multiple choice?
Sure. Yeah. That's
all right. With that. Do they trade Johnny Jones for a washing machine? Do they trade him for a broadcaster, or do they trade him for a turkey?
Oh, all spectacular choices. Well, especially the turkey and the washing machine. I'm trying to think what's the most ridiculous sounding. I want to go with the most ridiculous, since that would probably be why that would be the question asked. I'm going to go with a washing machine.
I believe the washing machine trade is from the Will Ferrell movie Semi-Pro, where he trades somebody for a washing machine. Johnny Jones was traded for a turkey. let me give you the story. I guess he was like a shortstop for the Lookouts. He's doing terribly. He's not hitting very well. They send him to the Charlotte Hornets. This is like a minor, like super minor league deal, where in exchange for a 25-pound turkey that the general manager of the team, I think, said was having a better year than Johnny Jones, this turkey. And so he had the bird cooked up for the Baseball Writers Association dinner. And apparently afterwards they said, yeah, the meat was a little tough. We think that perhaps the Hornets got the better end of the deal getting Johnny Jones over the turkey. Yeah, hilarious. 1930s baseball trade.
Imagine that happening nowadays, like just in 2022, a trade like that happening. You know, let's trade this person for a sunflower seeds or something along those lines. It would break the internet.
What about this one? In 1994, Cleveland trades for Minnesota's Dave Winfield for a player to be named later. When the season ended up being canceled due to a strike, Cleveland instead paid for Dave Winfield by what? What did they do instead of giving a player to be named later? How'd they pay for Dave Winfield?
Wow.
I'll give you the multiple choice again if you'd like.
Sure.
Okay, so did they just trade Winfield back to Minnesota? Just give him back. Did they take the Twins executives out for dinner? Or did they pay for all of Minnesota's bats and balls for the next season?
Oh, man, that's awesome. I don't know if this is going to be a question coming up for you, but I do remember a classic Blue Jays trade where John McDonald, fan favorite, essentially was traded for himself, yes. Player to be named later, then brought him back for himself. I'm going to say paid for their bats and balls for the season.
So that is a true story that somebody has been traded for all the bats and balls for the next season. It's not what Dave Winfield is traded for. The Cleveland executives just took the Twins executives out for dinner. The season was canceled. They took them out for dinner. That done deal. That's the trade. Yeah,
man, things are totally different back then. Even then, that's not all that long ago. Speaking of how the years fly by, you know, that's what 28, almost 30 years ago when they did that trade. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I'll spoiled one of my questions. I did have one in 1962. Harry Chitty was traded for a player to be named later. Who was he traded for? One of the answers was Harry Chitty himself, who gets traded back after they were like, yeah, he's not that good. You can have him back. Similarly, the same thing happened with John McDonald, the Prime Minister of Defense. So many Canadian references on this podcast. John McDonald was traded for a player to be named later, only to be traded back. I got a football one for you, Mikey.
Cool.
How many players and draft picks were involved in the 1989 trade between the Dallas Cowboys, the Minnesota Vikings, and kind of the San Diego Chargers? They got one thing of the deal.
Well, I didn't even know about the Chargers were aspect of that. Yeah, that's obviously the Herschel Walker trade.
It is.
Which was, see, that trade was the one that sort of set the core in place for the Dallas Cowboys to go on their crazy run there in the 90s. I would say players and picks. I know it was a lot. I'm almost certain it was the most in NFL history.
It's the most, I think, in any sport, I think.
Yeah. Even the Russell Wilson one had a bunch of players and picks, but it didn't amass the amount of this one. I want to say like 16 players and picks.
So close. 18 players and players and draft picks. Sorry.
I say 18 too. Darn.
Yeah. I know it still feels like 16. It still feels like a little low, you know, but it's high. It's a lot. Yeah. 18 picks and draft picks get transferred between mostly between the Cowboys and the Vikings. Although the San Diego Chargers do end up with one single player.
Who's the player? I'm assuming because I haven't even heard of they were the third team in this. It was probably some player that didn't amount to a whole lot, probably.
So the San Diego Chargers ends up with running back Darren Nelson.
Classic Darren Nelson.
Yeah. Looks like he did not last long in the league. The Vikings get Walker. They get a third round pick, San Diego's fifth round pick, Dallas's 10th round pick, and Dallas's third round pick, and a bunch of stuff goes to the Cowboys. Four players, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, eight draft picks. Yeah.
I don't know if this is going to be a question that you have coming up. Do you have a question coming up involving the New Orleans Saints at all?
No, I do not. No.
So how about when Mike Ditka, then coach of the Saints, traded his entire draft class to Washington for the rights to be able to draft Ricky Williams, running back? Draft class.
Yes. Noted celebrity Big Brother contestant Ricky Williams.
That's true.
Yeah. Wow. First, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. The 2000 first round pick and the third round pick. They kept their second round pick, but that's
a bridge too far to include the second round pick in that trade.
Come on. Yeah. amazing. I think I just have one more question for you. In 1920, the Baltimore Orioles bought Lefty Grove for the price of a.
Well, first of all, I hope he was an actual lefty. That's probably why that was his nickname, I'm assuming.
Love old timey baseball nicknames, Mikey. It'd be
pretty funny if sometimes, you know, they have the nickname and it's the ironic nickname, which is the opposite.
Yeah, he was Robert Moses Lefty Grove. And I do believe he did pitch left-handed.
Give me those multiple choice answers if you.
All right.
Please.
A new fence, a plate of oysters, or a dozen donuts.
Oh man, I wish these trades still happen. My goodness, this is just so sad that it doesn't. Let's go with a new fence.
It is a new fence.
Yeah, finally, that one right.
Yeah, he was traded for the cost $3,500, which was the cost for the owner of the team to replace their outfield fence. they ended up selling him to Philadelphia for a lot more money later. But both of these other, the oysters is also a true story, I believe. Joe Martina pitched for the Washington Senators in 1924. But he was traded to he was traded for two barrels of oysters and became known as Oyster Joe for the rest of his career.
Oh, dear.
And the donuts one is Len Dondero, who played in 1930, was almost traded for a dozen donuts, but the team fell through. When the the team split the donuts and the trade was declared null and void.
That's what I was going to say. 12, it's like, no, we can't give up 12. Like six, but that's our max, you know?
Yeah. Lots of this stuff is like, I looked for others. I had the Lefty Grove question there, but Cy Young was traded for the cost of a suit to buy a new suit for the owner. So
Cy Young? Yeah. He has an award named after him, and he's only traded for a suit?
He's traded for a suit, yeah. Gosh, baseball trades are just the best. That's what I got for you, Mikey. Thanks for playing. You did pretty well.
That was fun. Those are some hilarious choices. I mean, my goodness, if you hadn't given me the multiple choice answers on that, I would have been, this podcast would have been 79 hours long, probably trying to figure out a washing machine or whatever. Oysters. Yeah,
I think that's from, that's what he trades. He gets in return for the Flint Tropics, Will Ferrell. But yeah, that's right. Yeah, great. If anybody has any other, weird, quirky trades from, all of sports history, hit us up on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining me, Mikey. This was so fun. It's great to podcast with you.
Oh, it was fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
And I have been a guest on your podcast. We talked about the season premiere of Survivor last year and did some Blue Jays talk at the same time. But tell the folks where people can find you, what you're up to.
Yeah, so I've just started doing back recording the H-Dog pod. I've done 80 episodes of that. I just had my good former work colleague on that. So I just talk about pretty much whatever. Sometimes it's about sports or reality TV. Generally speaking, those are the two, maybe some other such stuff. But I like to interview an eclectic mix of people and not just, all sorts of life and all sorts of jobs and different stuff like that. So I do that, record that. You mentioned the Bros Ceremony before. I haven't done it this season with my co-host Adam Scully, but it's on YouTube where we recap what's going on with the Bachelor, Bachelor Nation, Bachelorette shows, Bachelor in Paradise, all that stuff. I think next year we'll be starting back up on that. On Twitter and Instagram, where you can find me on both at Hound Dog Harrison. It's Hound OG Harrison. At the time, I couldn't do enough characters, so I couldn't do the two Ds on that, which was so super annoying.
Yes.
I do my All Bets Par Off videos, as I talked about, where I make picks to hopefully win us money for golf tournament winners. As I said, I was on fire to start the year, been ice cold since. So hopefully I can pick a few winners here again on that. And I also write for sportsbettingdime.com, primarily for golf, but for other sports as well, where I give the odds for certain events. And then I give, again, tips, betting tips for who might win and advice and all that stuff.
Amazing. So much. So versatile, Mikey.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Yes. I am on Twitter at High From Grace, doing lots of stuff over, mostly on post show recaps, covering Winning Time. Mike, you watching Winning Time, HBO?
I have not. No, it's. I saw a tweet from you about that, but I have not seen it. What's that all about?
Yeah, so we're covering Winning Time. It's about the Lakers in the 1980s, Jerry Buss and Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It's been very fun. Two episodes so far. We were joined for episode two by Antonio Mazzaro, and Jason and I will be back for, we're back this week with episode three. Very fun show. Very, very good. Also covering Raised by Wolves with Josh Wigler and Taryn Armstrong, covering Our Flag Means Death with Brooklyn Zed and Sarah Carradine, and weekly movie coverage with Ariel. So lots of stuff to check out. Again, Twitter at High From Grace. Until next time, the podcast is over.